Hi there, Gemma here. If you're enjoying our podcast, then please do come along and put your name down on the wait list for our Schema Circle. And that way you'll hear when we next open the doors for new members to join. The Schema Circle is really our passion project, and it's our online schema coaching membership program. There's nothing really quite like it. It's new and innovative, and we just love it. Now, there's a huge library of content waiting for you already inside. We also continue to do 3 live Q&A coaching calls every month. Now, everything is recorded, of course, and ready for you to view at your own pace. If you're looking for, a unique way to understand yourself better and to make real change, then I do invite you to come and have a look. Go to theredflagproject.com.au/SC. Now, the Schema Circle isn't therapy, but it's a great accompaniment to your own therapy journey. It's also a great resource for therapists and coaches and for anybody, men and women, wanting to know more about schemas and how we can use this fantastic model to empower ourselves to make actual changes, the changes we want in our life. Now, it's currently housed on our Red Flag website, and just click the link below to read all about it. I hope to see you inside one day. You're listening to the Good Moon Clinic podcast with Drs. Justine Corrie and Gemma Gladstone. We're 2 clinical psychologists and schema therapists with a passion for helping people get to the heart of the matter, to find out what's really going on and to help break unhelpful life patterns. In this podcast, we'll take an in-depth look at the common issues our clients bring to therapy and hope to offer you some useful new ways to think about your life and the people in it. So stay with us. We hope you enjoy this episode. Well, hello and welcome back to another episode of the Good Mood Clinic podcast. My name's Gemma Gladstone. I'm here with Justine Corrie.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Jim.
Hi. We are approaching our, I think it's the 11th week of lockdown in New South Wales, Sydney.
Yep, 11 weeks.
11 weeks, and it's been really quite taxing at times, hasn't it?
Very taxing, very relentless, actually. It's like Groundhog Day.
It's Groundhog Day, and it's hard balancing all the stuff and you have to do. Also, the struggles that people are experiencing. So it's extensive, the impact.
Yeah, I reckon obviously everyone's focused on the stats to do with COVID. We're getting those every day. But yeah, there's a lot of suffering that isn't being measured at the moment. And I think we'll see that rolling out after the lockdown ends. That's what I'm hearing about. It's kind of escalating.
Yeah, there's so many different ways that this pandemic has affected us socially, psychologically, just goes on and on.
On and on.
So, it's hard to find the light sometimes in situations like this.
I know. It's like I was saying to clients, it's sort of you're in the cycle of distress or resistance to the whole thing, and then you're trying to turn your mind so you're grateful for what is happening or isn't happening, and then you go into a period of sort of radical acceptance about that. It feels okay.
So managing the uncertainty is really tough, isn't it?
Yeah, uncertainty in terms of when it's going to end, do you mean?
I think we've had a bit of an indication now. Obviously, we've heard a bit of an indication about when vaccination rates get up to a certain point and a percentage, then there'll be some alleviations and lifting of restrictions and schools will commence again. There's a bit of a guide, which is nice, but there's still some uncertainty and some concern about that and just all the unknowns, that people are dealing with, the unknowns about children and their safety and lots of different things. It's hard to, it's very easy to get carried away and let the mind run off in all sorts of scary directions. So it's difficult to be grounded in these times. So we've got to take care of ourselves, up the self-care, get out every day, all the stuff that you know what to do, all the stuff talk about and we try to do ourselves, and talk to your kids openly. I would ask them things like, if they were worried about stuff. I had a really interesting conversation with my daughter last night just because I broached the topic. So that was good. So don't be afraid to go there and just get worries are worried sort of aired and spoken about does not, you know, is much better. So we're going to focus on something we're really passionate about in our next series of episodes. And so you all know that Justine and I are very passionate and focused on helping women in particular make better choices in relationships for mm-hmm. their own well-being and to reduce risk. And a lot of our clients had very sort of problematic relationship patterns. And we ourselves have been in relationships where we've been in relationships with unavailable partners and so forth. Then we also are very interested in helping women identify what are red flags early on, very early on in relationships or dating that come up that may allude to potentially dangerous outcomes or may allude to a relationship that has certain qualities. And those qualities are qualities of your partner being controlling. So we developed a short course for women called the Red Flag Project. We're going to be evolving this over time and adding to that. And we'll tell you more about that as the weeks progress. But today we're going to talk about some of the darker red flags that may appear early on. And then we're going to have a series of podcasts, Justine. Do you want to say a bit more about that?
We talk about emotional unavailability as a continuum, don't we, Jim, mm-hmm. in terms of how we think about it. And at one end, you've got sort of partners who are more benignly unavailable. So, you know, they're sort of people who have trouble being there emotionally. Then at the other end, you've got people who are more toxic. So the type of people who may meet criteria for certain personality disorders and who have a completely different agenda in relationships to what the average person would. We help women in our clinic who are in these types of situations cope with them. But we, as Jim said, we're all about prevention. And so today we're going to be talking about how to spot them early in dating. But over the next three podcasts after that, we're going to explore these, what we call darker red flags, in more detail. So we'll be talking about why prevention is important, how your schemas, the knowledge of your schemas can help you understand and make different decisions if you find yourself in relationships where there's coercive control, for example. And then maybe another one about how to be a bit more practical about being in that situation. So what are some of the considerations you might have to entertain and what you might just start doing in order to extricate yourself from that?
And like you mentioned, the continuum. So our red flag project, you know, talks about what are some markers of unavailability on that continuum and more benign ones and then more serious markers of indicators of coercive control and controlling behaviours right up to the worst case scenarios of men who perpetrate violence against their partners. This is really serious stuff and we're going to have some resources linked to this episode, but I just want to give you couch our next few episodes in this context and tell you a few statistics that you may or may not be aware of. We're going to talk about what are some markers, and this is not 100%, but what are some markers that might show up early on when you meet a guy and you get to know him early on that might give away a propensity to become quite controlling and toxic in a relationship. And this is so important because in Australia, one woman every roughly 8 or 9 days is actually killed by her male partner or ex-partner intimate relationship, usually while trying to get out of that relationship. And in the UK, it's one woman every 3 or 4 days is actually killed by trying to leave a romantic relationship. And in the US, it's up to 3 women. Every day whose lives are taken by their partner while trying to extricate themselves from that relationship. They're devastating statistics. We are 2 women and we know that there is a growing culture around the world who are quite frankly sick and tired of this. And we know, and the research tells us, that a pattern of coercive control most often precedes these crimes. And that coercive control often does not involve physical violence and because of that often escapes the attention of the police. And also because of that, in these crimes, historically, men have used defences such as crimes of passion, or he just snapped, he was jealous. And the proof for that has defenders have used the fact that these guys have not had a history of physical violence in the relationship to help facilitate that defence of, look, he was just under so much pressure, he snapped. But the research tells us that this actually is not what really is happening. But what really is happening is there is a pervasive and persistent pattern of coercive control and other control tactics that go under the radar and escape attention of people that know the woman even quite well, sometimes, but not always, and certainly escape the attention of the police. We're all about prevention, and we're incredibly passionate about this area. And so that's why we thought about the Red Flag Project. And that's what we're going to be talking about over the next series of podcasts.
It's so sobering, isn't it?
When it's sobering.
Yes. And then just all the suffering behind that statistic, those relationships that don't thankfully end in that worst case scenario, but just all the mental health consequences of being in that type of relationship are just so profound.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, knowledge is power. And although we certainly can't control other people's behaviours, but we can be more aware of tuning in to our internal radar. And we said we're going to talk about our own schemas and how a good understanding of what makes us tick as women can help us identify some of these red flags. And in that case, knowledge is power.
Totally.
We're going to do a little bit of a role play now, Justine.
We are. Another one of our role plays.
Another one of our role plays. It's a fun, but it's a serious topic. Let's start, because I've had, not really, this is my character in a role play, but you're just going to call me Gemma, right?
Yeah, I'm just going to call you Gemma.
It's easier because you're looking at me. So
what created dissonance.
Okay.
Trying to pretend you weren't Gemma.
So I've come into therapy with Justine. Mm-hmm. I've been just starting to date this guy called Tony. This is in a non-COVID world, this scenario, this role play.
They have to suspend another reality.
Suspend another reality. It's in a non-COVID world because we're going on face-to-face dates.
Okay. Hopefully that will be happening again soon.
Hi, Justine. Thanks for fitting me in, because so much happening I need to fill you in about. My head's swimming.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, it's really glad you're here. Let's dive into what's been going on for you. I know you've been sort of dating a bit and trying to notice what's going on, and let's go through a date in detail perhaps with Tony and see what we can see.
Okay. I'm not sure where I was up to, but I just started, you know, I was so hesitant. But anyway, I started seeing Tony and I actually feel so good. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe there's stuff I'm missing, but I actually feel, I don't know, I feel really buzzed about it.
Mm.
Anyway, it's early days. We've only been out, we've only been out three times. Well, apart from the first time I met him, I just met him out and then it turned into a date automatically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was just like, you know, he was so confident and, you know, we met out and then all of a sudden we were having dinner. Anyway, so this was on the weekend.
So I'll stop you there. So you've seen him three times in what period of time? Since I last saw you?
No, I think I met him and then, I don't know, over the last 2 weeks?
Right, three times in the last 2 weeks, okay.
Yeah. So we went out on Saturday night. He sort of suggested a few places. So we landed on a tapas wine bar in the city. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I wanted to meet him there because actually it was after I did a workshop. But anyway, he insisted on picking me up.
Mm-hmm.
So he insisted on coming to pick me up and I thought that was kind of nice. Anyway, mm-hmm. I said to him, look, buzz for me. And I'll come down, you know, because my flatmate was there and I didn't really want, you know. So I said, buzz for me and I'll come down. But so I'm getting ready. I'm completely ready and everything. And then there's a knock at the door, like actually on the apartment door.
Yeah.
And he's there.
What? So he's at the door.
Yeah.
In person. Okay.
Yeah. Like, and so he didn't buzz, but I guess I don't know, obviously people were walking downstairs and he just slipped in. Anyway, mm-hmm. It was kind of nice because he made the effort to come up.
And what did he say when he saw you, when you opened the door? What did he say?
Yeah. Oh, he said, wow. I guess he's talking about how I looked.
Okay. So he sort of, okay. And when you saw him there, so you'd obviously asked him something specific, you know, to actually buzz and you'd come down. And when you saw him there, what did that feel like?
I was a bit surprised because, I was a bit thrown, but it was nice. I quite like him actually.
Okay. So you were a bit thrown, a bit shocked, but actually he gave you a really nice compliment and then it kind of felt a bit like romantic and
Yeah, it did. Okay. He said, so we were walking down and he was driving. We got in and it turned out he picked another place altogether.
Okay.
So we got there and
did he say why he'd done that?
No, he just said no, he likes this place and so he wants us to go there. So I figured, oh well, at least I don't have to, you know, I'm sick and tired of these dates where, you know, the guy doesn't know what you want to do. And anyway, Tony's just not like that. So we went out and we got there and we got to this place. It was a bit similar. It's just a bit different kind of, it was like a wine bar and there was people eating in another section. So I thought, oh, lovely. You know, it was really trendy, this bar counter. So I couldn't wait to sit down at the bar and have a look. It's really beautiful art deco features behind. Anyway, so we got in there and I walked towards the bar to sit down and he says, no. And he kind of held my arm and then he said, we're going this way. And then he just ushered me towards this table. And so the waiter had to keep up with us and said, I was like, have you got a reservation? And he said, yes. And he was just, I don't know, he exuded so much confidence.
Okay.
It was like he really had a presence in the room.
And that, okay, I'll just stop you there. So when you rocked up to the bar, you actually had a preference that you wanted to go and sit at the bar and take in the vibe of the place.
Yeah, well, yes, but that didn't really matter.
Okay, but well, I'll just stop you there. So that was something that you wanted, and he, though, I suppose he didn't actually check in with you at that point at all. He just sort of took control and had his own plan. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, he didn't check in with me, but like, you know, that doesn't really matter, does it?
Well, look, we'll just keep talking.
Okay.
Because we're like, it's, you know, you're doing really well. Like you're, I suppose you're giving me this account and a few things are adding up, but let's just keep going. And then at the end, we can look at it as a whole.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So we sat down and then he said, I'll be right back. And so I'm sitting down, I'm thinking, okay, well, this is really nice. I've never been here before. Anyway, the next thing you know, he's coming back from the bar with a tray with these drinks. So he remembered from last time the wine I like to drink. He knew I really enjoyed Pinot Gris, so he brought me a glass of wine. But then he also had a cocktail, like a fancy martini kind of thing.
Right.
Which he brought back a couple of drinks. Anyway, and he said, let's just have a cocktail toast first and then we can have our wine.
And what was that like for you? What was that like?
It's nice to be taken care of.
So you thought he was taking care of you?
Yeah. It's nice to be taken care of.
Can I stop you there? Did he know that you liked cocktails or that amount of alcohol or?
I don't know. Well, we did have a few drinks when we met the first time, but no, I don't know. I was a little bit surprised because I thought, wow, what do you think? I'm a big drinker.
Yeah.
But I drank it because I thought I couldn't really say no at that point, Justine, because I'm assuming that cocktail was probably pretty expensive and it looked really, well, actually, I don't really like those kind of cocktails
because
it was a martini, you know, so it was quite dry and packed a punch, but it's not like I could say no, right?
And also in that point, it looks like a really nice gesture. Like he was wanting, you know, you were thinking he's creating this nice experience.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're sort of thinking? You could kind of put it in that bucket.
And maybe I should try, like, why am I being so stuffy?
Okay.
Maybe I should just try it and go with the flow. Like, you know, it's only a drink.
Okay.
I'm trying not to read so much into things, you know. I think I live too much in my head. I don't want to read too much into that. I just want to go with the flow, you know.
So you kind of surrendered. You were surrendering to the experience.
I was surrendering totally to the experience. I thought, why not?
All right.
Why not? It's so rare that someone puts this much effort in So I had the martini. Look, it wasn't that bad, but oh, I just already felt like, oh my God, I don't want to have any more of these. And then I hadn't even looked properly at the menu and the waiter comes over. So I was just about to say, can I have a few more minutes? And then Tony just picked up the menu and just ordered. And like, I can't tell you what a relief that was to have him do that for me. He just said, look, I think we're going to have this. And he actually made some good choices. And although I don't like oysters, but anyway, I said to them, I'm not eating an oyster. And then he tried to pressure me into eating an oyster. And I said, look, I don't anyway. And then he made a bit of a joke about me not trying new things. But anyway, everything else he chose was fine.
Okay. So how did that feel in that moment? So you're saying at one level you weren't quite ready to order. You're still perusing the menu and deciding what you wanted. But he already just, once again, took control and ordered for you. What did that feel like?
I don't know. You're probably not going to. I actually felt really good, Justine.
Mm-hmm.
It felt so good for him to just be the man.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
so
just
that's
order for me, you know, like I liked it.
I know. And I hate to be a party pooper, but sort of here to help you figure out this. And like, in a way, I'm observing this conflict you have, because on one hand, you're kind of saying that these things he's doing, you're a bit shocked or surprised, you know. But then on the other hand, you're feeling really taken care of, and like he's sort of, like being a bit romantic, and a part of you feels really cared for, part of you's liking it.
Yeah, so I'm just, sure.
You're kind of describing a bit of a conflict there. So tell me what happened next, and we'll just, but I'm pretty sure this is the direction we're headed in. And this is, you know, it's really great you're giving me all these details, because I think you're going to be able to observe something quite important at the end of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll help you do that. So just keep talking.
Yeah. Well, no, it was pretty good, you know. Like he was asking me lots of, like, you know, I listened to what you said and he was interested in me mainly. I mean, most of the time. I mean, he sort of, like, at one point he was a little bit distracted about some people on the other table. But mainly he was really focused. He was asking me questions about what, you know, about my work and about what I like to do on the weekend. And he was asking me questions about my family and all that kind of stuff. So he was pretty attentive, you know. I knew he said watch for, so he was curious.
Okay, so he passed that test. That's really great you're aware of that. Who was at the other table, like when you said he was a bit distracted?
It was funny. I think it must have been like a small hen's night. They were sitting like over the other side.
So you kind of saw him looking over there. What was that like for you, seeing him do that? What'd that feel like?
Well, I mean, I was looking too. So there was this one woman who particularly looked a certain way, and, you know, he made a few comments on her. But
what did he say?
Oh, look. I can't quite remember, but it had to do with, you know, how she looked in this dress she was wearing and her boobs, basically.
All right. So he dropped a sort of comment about her cleavage in a dress.
Yeah.
While he's on a date with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like what? Like hearing it out loud like that, you know, he's sort of making a sexual comment about another woman while he's on a date with you. What does that feel like?
Well, I mean, they were on a hen's night, so I didn't really think too much about it. He sort of made a couple of comments, but he always brought the focus back to us.
Okay.
He made a couple of comments about this one woman who was quite, she looked quite confident and was gesticulating a lot in the way she was talking, and he made a few negative comments about her.
What did he say?
Well, that, you know, she was a bit full of herself and that kind of thing, basically.
Because she was confident.
Yeah, that she should tone it down a bit.
Okay.
And that she looked a bit kind of like, I can't remember the exact word he used, but he was just making some, I mean, that was the only thing that bothered me, actually. It was just, a bit of a comment about her, which I didn't think was necessary, given we were having a nice time.
Yeah. So let me, like, I mean, I think this is actually, can we just explore this in a bit more detail, Jem, because I think this is a particularly important thing to notice. So you're on a date with someone, you know, he's, I suppose he's meant to be interested in you, and he's making comments about another woman of a sexual nature, but also disparaging, a disparaging comment about her being full of herself while she's on a date with you, right? And a part of you doesn't like that, but then what I notice is your urge to kind of gloss over it a bit and dismiss it and not really think about it too much. Are you noticing that? The urge to do that?
Yeah, I guess. But yeah. I'm struck by how he makes me feel, basically.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And
which is what?
I feel good being in his presence. Like, I feel like he just has this way about him, and I kind of feel a little bit like, oh, I feel really special.
You feel special.
I do. When I'm with Tony, I feel special.
Because he's so...
He's got a way about him. Right. He's confident.
Okay.
And you know what?
Yeah.
He didn't... I mean, I was a bit funny about this, but then I realised that, no, he's just being chivalrous, because I actually wanted to, you know, he bought me the drinks and last time he paid, and I was really wary that I wanted to contribute this time.
Yeah, yeah.
So I said, look, hey, let me shout the dinner, you know, because he bought the drinks separate, and I said, oh, let me get this one. And he laughed.
He laughed.
He's like, oh. Yeah, as if. And I said, no, well, let me at least go halves, you know. And then he put his hand on mine and across the table, and he squeezed it, and he said, that's my job.
Right. Okay. So, and did that feel good when he said that?
Sure.
Yeah.
It felt good.
Why? Why did it feel good?
It felt good because I felt like, again, I just felt special. I felt taken care of. I felt like he was in control. It made me feel like he cared. And then we went out. He wanted to go for another drink after dinner. I said, like, no, I just want to get a coffee. So we ended up jumping in an Uber. And next thing you know, we were at this other sort of wine bar.
Yeah.
But I said, hey, I said, do they have coffee here? And he said, yeah, no worries. They have coffee. So anyway, they did actually. The guy looked at me like to say, what do you want, a coffee? But I was in the barman, but we got a table and we had a coffee, so that was good. But I kind of had to insist. I don't know, this guy really wants to wine and dine me.
Okay, and then how did the night end?
Well, this is what I wanted to talk to you about, this part.
Okay, all right.
Because this is the part that I actually don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having the coffee, and actually, he, with his coffee, he orders another glass of red wine. Anyway, so, but he really holds his alcohol. So he asked me, like, what I like to do. And I said, yeah, I love getting out, like, you know, in nature. I love it. And so he started talking about his friend who's got this holiday house up in the mountains, and how there's lots of great tracks around there and everything. And he was talking about how it's so cozy, you know, and it's being winter and all. And then he said to me, oh, you know, sounds like you like the outdoors. I said, oh, yeah, I love it. Like, there's nothing nicer than, you know, going on a hike. And then he said, great, I've got it all sorted. We'll definitely have to go to his friend's place.
Right.
And he said, what are you doing the week after next? I think he's going away the next weekend. I said, oh, I don't know. And he said, like, sorted. And he picked up his phone and he sent a text, I don't know, to his friend or something about, and said, like, is the place free? And I didn't even have time to think about it. And I said, okay.
Right. There and then he sort of booked it.
Yes, he totally booked it then and there. Well, he said, you know, I don't know, booked it, but, you know, because he knows the guy, so he doesn't have to book it, I suppose. But anyway, he organized. He picked up his phone and said, and then he said, put his phone down. He said, sorted. It's booked. We're done.
Wow.
And then I thought, wow, okay, well, that at that point I didn't know what to say, but that sounds great. Yeah.
So the part of you that didn't know what to say, what was going on there?
Well, because firstly, I don't, you know, it's not like we've slept together or anything, like, yet. Mm. I'm not sure about, you know, so I don't really want to go away with him anyway on a weekend.
Yeah.
It's early. And I just thought it was a bit quick, but at the same time, it was such a lovely gesture. And again, he's going above and beyond thinking about me because I said I loved the, you know, and he just came up, it's so romantic. He just came up with this idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just thought, wow, you know, how nice. Mm. Like he was asking me lots of questions about how much I liked the outdoors. And I thought, wow, this guy can read me like a book. And then he suggested that. And, you know, like, I don't know. I didn't want to be a killjoy and say no. So I said, yeah. But then I thought, uh-oh, what would Justine say? So I wanted to talk to you about it.
Totally. Well, look, as you've been talking, you know, and I know I interrupted you a few times to clarify some things, but I think you can kind of see where my thoughts are. I think the part of you that was saying, you know, I don't know him that well and it hasn't progressed to that point yet is probably a part we should, we need to beef her up a little bit, I think. Because, mm-hmm. Can I just sort of give you an overview of what I've observed in terms of what you've been saying?
Yeah, okay. I know it. I knew.
Yeah, yeah. Good. I'm glad. So I'll put my party pooper hat on. And what I heard, you know, if you just think about the whole.
It's not like there's 100 guys out there, Justine, waiting to go on it. You know, they're so hard to find.
Well, yes, they are, but you'll waste a lot of time and you'll have a lot of heartache if you sort of go with that rationale and stay in a relationship that's not going to work for you. Now, I mean, obviously, this is one date, so we've got to see it in context. Now, at the moment, we're collecting data, right? So we're trying to look for patterns that emerge. Now, just we do know that you tend to choose guys who, you know, can be a little bit on the controlling or depriving side. So we've already looked into that in your history, right? So we have to be really careful that we're not going to go there again because we don't want you to end up in another dud relationship. But as you're talking, all I'm hearing really, if you take away all the butterflies and rainbows and how good it felt, is actually someone who actually wasn't really checking in with you much in terms of how that date rolled out. I mean, he was making all the decisions. He was sort of not really being mindful of your preferences or what you wanted. And he was putting on a great show. Don't get me wrong. Like, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking, wow, you know, this is like something out of one of those rom-com movies, the guy who kind of knows how to put on a good show on a first date and, you know, do all these lovely romantic gestures. Yeah. But actually.
Oh, sorry. My phone just went off. Oh, it's Tony.
Yeah. Oh. his ear's burning.
He just sent me a text.
What did it say?
I forgot to tell you about that. No, he just. Because the other night he was talking about one of his exes. Yeah.
He was talking about one of his exes.
Yeah. And he just made a joke about her again in the text saying, you know, something, you know, not like my ex psycho Fiona. Oh, gosh. She sounded like a real piece of work. Anyway, what were you saying?
Well, that's another red flag that just popped up right there. Hey. Red flags, dark red flags, I suppose, is what we need to talk about with Tony because he had his own agenda on that date and there was a lot of love bombing going on, right? And so if you think about it, it's not bad that a guy wants to be romantic. So if you take it at face value, he looks like he's being very romantic with all those things. But what was absent from all those gestures was actually checking in to see if that was what you wanted. He was just sort of really taking control and not actually asking what your preferences were, you know, with rocking up to the front door, buying the drinks, buying the alcohol, kind of, you know, not checking in if you wanted to sit at the bar, ordering for you. He was also a bit rude to the waiter, wasn't he? He's sort of a bit condescending and irritated. Yes, yeah. Right. Another one, he was obviously looking at other women, making jokes, you know, simultaneously sexualizing her, but then being critical of her, this woman you were looking at the men's party, looking in the holiday, you know. And I think, you know, what was really interesting is that part of you that was sort of clocking that something wasn't quite right. You were feeling a bit rushed, right? Even though you then quickly flipped into a state of mind where you were sort of seeing it as romantic and caring and you know, a guy who knows what he wants, you know, because that's sort of, you know, that is an attractive quality. But I think when you're doing that, you're not really giving enough airtime to your real feelings about these decisions he was making for you. Because I know you know, you're actually a woman who likes to make your own decisions normally. And this is a bit out of character. Like if the equivalent situation happened in a friendship or at a work situation, I don't think you would be as accommodating, or, you know, you would be more annoyed. It would sort of be something that you really didn't like. But you put that aside and you then go into the story about him being this, you know, great guy. And obviously there's a lot of chemistry there too, from the sounds of it, the way you talk about him.
There is.
Yeah. So I know I'm a party pooper, but you probably knew that was going to roll out when you came to see me today. I would be worried about you, to be honest, Gemma, if you pursued this relationship, because this could escalate in a direction that was not very nice, potentially.
Really? Already? I mean, but doesn't everybody deserve?
Yes. And, you know, we can set up, I mean, this is just one date, so, you know, but I think we have to just look at the data this has given us and really take on board what it's potentially telling us. And I think I need to help you set up a few tests for him. I imagine you'll see him again, you know. I don't think you should go on the trip, though. I mean, that would actually be a good test for you to say, you know what, on reflection, I'm not quite ready to do that yet, really enjoying your company, but can we put that off for a bit just to see how things go and see how he responds to that? Like, I think that would actually be a really good test.
Really?
Yeah. What feelings do you have about doing that?
I kind of already sort of said I would.
Yeah. Yes, which is fine.
So I might feel guilty.
Guilty,
because
okay.
What about if he's kind of organised it already and I'm just going to pull the plug? Is that okay?
Well, I mean, this is the work we're doing with your sort of other directedness with your schemas. But yes, it is okay, because I think that if he was a good one, he would want you to feel comfortable, and, you know, he might actually think I'd have got a bit carried away on the third date, was it? Second date?
Yeah, third. Well, the first third one date. Was just evolved. Yeah.
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 You know, I mean, he should be fine with it, and it should just be business as usual, getting to know each other and having some nice times before you actually go away together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the direction I'd like you to head. Now, we can then look at how your schemas would get in the way of you doing that. You can move on to that in the session if you like. I think this is a really good sort of opposite action for you to try and do. But, you know, you really need to hold this up for further examination, because if I collude with that part of you that sees him as, you know, this knight in shining armour, then I don't think I'd be doing you, you know, a good service.
Mm.
What do you think?
Okay, but he's a really good kisser.
Well,
I found out at the end of that night.
Right, okay. So,
and it's amazing. Like, I've not felt like that in ages.
Oh, okay. Well, that's unfortunate, because that is a really hard feeling to say no to. And, you know, yes, okay, it's nice as a good kisser, but that's just one criteria. We can't sort of overvalue that, given the other sort of signs he's clearly given you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm so sick of this.
I know, it's relentless, isn't it, when you're trying to get out of this loop? But you'll get there.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Wow. I actually really got into that, Gemma. I was actually totally absorbed in your story.
Are you a woman currently going through a breakup? Is the pain of the breakup interfering with your ability to live your best life? If this is you, then you'll want to get a copy of Justin and Gemma's Breakup Guide. The Red Flag Project Breakup Guide will provide you with the practical advice and psychological support you'll need as you navigate the emotional ups and downs of a breakup. Taking care of yourself and your future self will be much easier with the support you'll get from this step-by-step companion resource. You'll find a link in the show notes, which will take you straight to the Breakup Guide for more information. Or you can go to goodmoodclinic.com.au/RFP-BUG. That's goodmoodclinic.com.au/RFP-BUG.
Hello, lovely listeners. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. It's Gemma Gladstone here,
and I want to let you know a little bit more about the Red Flag Project. It's an online course for women which provides you with a dating strategy designed to help you understand why you've ended up in relationships with men who have been emotionally unavailable or narcissistic. In the course, we'll help you begin to break this pattern and to really understand what's going on underneath it all. We'll teach you about all the actual red flags to watch out for and give you lots of practical advice and strategies. It will be life-changing if you let it. Just click on The Red Flag Project in the show notes below for this episode to get all the info. Now let's get back to the show.
Thank you, therapist Justine.
No problem. No problem. Some of my clients who see me, you know, as their therapist will recognize snippets of that conversation.
Uh-huh. Oh, gosh. That's the thing, isn't it? So Tony was, like we've commented, you know, there's a lot of signs in there that Tony was orchestrating that date and was in that powerful position and right from the beginning was controlling the scenario.
Totally. Yeah, he was really taking control and not actually checking in. And I think that's a really subtle red flag, but one that's quite important because he could still be doing or like wanting to make those gestures, but the missing part was the check-in with you to see if you were comfortable, because some of those things were assumptions you shouldn't make about someone's preferences, like, you know, do you want a cocktail? You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't know you well enough. Like, I reckon like that. But that's actually quite common, isn't it? And then the subtle put downs, obviously referencing the ex. I mean, that, I think, listeners, I suppose why Gemma can roll out that vignette so convincingly is because, you know, these things actually happen. You know, these are the things we hear.
And this is just on date three.
Yes.
And, you know, in the early, so this episode's all about what the early giveaways. Although Justine's right, you have to collect data and you have to have a few meetings, and my alter ego, Gemma, should certainly not go away with him on the weekend, because once you get into an intimate or sexual relationship for women, you know, your attachment system goes off. You're going to find it much harder to make rational, healthy adult decisions and break things down. So whatever you do, you have to delay that as much as possible. But, you know, with this guy, he really wanted to take control. He did mention his ex on that date, and he was a bit disparaging towards her and made a few derogatory comments. But the way he said it, he sounded so calm and rational. It wasn't coming from a hothead place. It was coming from quite a calm, rational place for him.
But contemptuous.
Yeah, totally. That contemptuous thing. Yeah. He had an agenda, Tony. He had an agenda, and the agenda was, let's try to secure contact and a bond. Let's kind of take control. Let's sit in the driver's seat. Let's make decisions. Let's perhaps see how far I can even push it.
Yeah, so you're saying there's a manipulative intent there that is all dressed up with the butterflies and rainbows of the romantic gestures. Because this is the thing, isn't it, where we kind of fed this idea that the Prince Charming, or whoever, you know, however you want to call it, he'll actually do things like that. That's why it's a bit confusing. Like, it's out there in our cultural reference, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Guy who'll kind of be gentlemanly and charming and
totally
take care of you. Yeah, I think that's the
cultural idioms of, you know, the man in control, taking the stand, making the decisions, a rock that you can lean on. And while these are also elements of someone who might be healthy, but the difference would be that this healthy person would check in with you.
That's right.
Would respect you, would be curious about what your needs were, rather than the assumption that I know what you want, I know what you need. And with a healthy partner, there's no huge rush to secure a commitment. Whereas with a partner who has got the propensity to be very controlling, there is this tendency for them to be emotional and physical space invaders. They will want to get close, and that may feel awkward, or again, we talked about that pseudo intimacy, that may feel a bit off, but it gets pushed away because at the same time, part of you feels romanticized by this, like someone is taking the lead and that feels really nice. And that taps into our child modes about wanting to be taken care of by a healthy caretaker, that is. But
that's right. And so, you know, you would have noticed me kind of help trying to get you to notice those different parts of you. You know, so one part felt like this, but there was another part that felt like that. And that's how you start to notice these things, isn't it, Jim? We talked about that in our red flag project, noticing how you can have sort of these conflicted ideas about the person, even though eventually the part that sees them as a, you know, a great catch wins out. There's still other things in there that you have to notice and pay attention to.
Yes.
Not dismiss.
And totally. Although, you know, just coming back to that issue about the ex, this is not so uncommon. It sounds a bit out there, but it's not actually that uncommon that there's a lot of guys, and I've spoken to a lot of women who've said that on the first or second date, a guy has mentioned, he has given himself away. He has highlighted an aspect of his history. He's even gone so far as to say, my ex-girlfriend took an AVO out on me. You think, wow, that's, are you making that up, Gemma? But no.
No.
No, we're not making that up.
No.
And that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Have you heard that too? Maybe not just exact that same expression.
Totally. And as you were saying that, I was thinking, what is the function of them revealing that? Is it like them, is that like another test in a way to see how successful their strategy is? Or is it
what you'll believe?
Well, yeah, just because if you say it out loud, so this person you've just met, you know, who's busy love bombing you, but then in the same breath is had an AVO taken out on them. Like, I'm just thinking, I mean, say it out loud, it's quite extreme. What do you think's going on there?
Well, I mean, it's always coupled with painting the ex in a crazy light. Like my girlfriend was unhinged.
Yes.
And she was always, you know, pushing me, or she was always doing this or doing that, or she would be needy, or she was always flirting with other men, or she was doing this and that. He brings that up and it's quite revealing and providing lots of information that he's usually in that context, no matter what the story, he is positing himself as the victim and her as the perpetrator. And he goes insofar as telling you that. And that's off, right? We've got to be get the antenna out for that one and notice that that feels strange for someone to be revealing such personal information.
So early
and so quickly. And it's also depending on how, if someone with perhaps more, you know, more callous traits, maybe, you know, they're testing the boundaries with you to see how much you will hear without putting a boundary up for him.
How much will this
woman tolerate from me? He may even use like sexist or lewd jokes to test the same. How much will she tolerate here? How much will she tolerate for this fantasy that I'm feeding her about making her feel that I'm romanticizing her? That, because that feels so good. She's got that. So how much bad behavior will she actually tolerate? And so the agenda is about getting you to make a commitment to him. And we know that these guys, in the worst case scenario, the ones that culminate in these deadly outcomes, the one thing they do not like is for a woman to decide to break a commitment with them. It's not the woman who can decide to end the commitment. It's them.
It's them, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a whole lot of stuff, you know, inside the head of a perpetrator and what's going on for them and their schemas and modes, et cetera. But you have to slow down when you feel, that would be the one important tip, is to slow down, collect data, make these tests, like Justine said, you know, say what you're not comfortable with, put a little boundary up and see, is it respected or is it kind of pushed or is it made fun of?
Yeah, the make fun of, it's like, that's a common one, isn't it? There's sort of like a subtle put down, like, and I think even you said, you know, about the drink, you didn't want to look like you were not appreciating it or, you know, felt guilty. So guilt is an emotion that sort of gets used
guilt can come up in the woman for all sorts yes. of things, you know, like even about, you know, or deciding whether to have sex with the guy or yeah. not. Guilt yeah. will be there, you know, but you know, he's spent so much attention on me. I feel obliged to sleep with him. You know, I've heard yeah. clients say that as well.
Yes. So, yeah, which is, we'll discuss that more in our next podcast, yeah. actually, how your schemas can get in the way of listening to your gut, basically. Hey.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this topic is obviously a really big one. We encourage you to kind of, if it's certainly brought up anything for you, the Australian number is 1-800-RESPECT, and we'll put that as a link in the show notes mm-hmm. with some resources that you can check out. What about some books on the subject, Justine?
The one that comes to mind is obviously Jess Hill.
Yeah.
What's the title of that
again? See What You Made Me Do.
See What You Do, yeah. I'll just flag, though, that is quite a harrowing read. It's fantastic what she's done. It mm-hmm. just highlights it all. But it's quite harrowing, so it could be triggering for you potentially. So I'll just not, you know, I'm not saying don't read it, but just have that in mind if you.
So is the documentary. It's that 3-part series, See mm-hmm. What You Made Me Do, based on the book and the doc. So it's fascinating and interesting, but it's and it's educational, but it is quite triggering. So perhaps a better place to start is two books I'll mention. One I read years ago, it's called mm-hmm. The Gift of Fear. And oh, this yeah. will tap into some of the stuff we talk about when we talk about our own schemas, mm-hmm. trusting our gut, and some things that we talk about in the Red Flag Project. The Gift of Fear by Gavin De Becker just talks about the experience of fear with women and how we need to be mindful of what's going on and trusting our gut. And then a more recent book by Jane Monckton Smith, who is a researcher in the area of coercive control and domestic abuse, has written a book, In Control. And she's come up with an 8-stage model from her experience of researching perpetrators that culminate in homicide. And she's come up with an 8-stage framework for understanding
how it progresses.
Perpetrators and the progression.
So does she talk about this early stages like yeah, we've done absolutely. Today, does she? Okay, interesting.
Absolutely. Yep. She talks about the early stages. And she was an ex-police officer as well oh, wow. and went into research. So it's really interesting. But that's sort of like a book to read for a bit of one step more distant really from
yeah, okay.
the Jess Hill book. But it's certainly something to be mindful of. And that's why we spent today with the role play about Tony, who showed these early markers of control, because no matter how charismatic Tony is, and he's probably going to be charismatic if he's showing these early signs, we've got to be really mindful of how that feels and not to dismiss those early warning signs, because there were plenty of red flags in that scenario.
So many.
Yeah.
So many. It was a smorgasbord.
Yeah. If you've got any particular comments or if you've got something that you think is a topic that you'd like us to expand on in this particular area, Justine and Gemma at goodmood.com.au. And please visit our podcast page at goodmood.com.au as well to drop us a line there.
And we'll just also just let you know about the Red Flag Project again, which sort of goes into this in more detail, how to basically it's a dating strategy informed by schemas and red flags. Noticing those early on. So you can mm-hmm. find that at the Learning Hub page of our website, so goodmood.com.au. And I also just wanted to let you know that Gemma and I are offering a new service, actually. It's schema coaching. It'll be one-on-one sessions via Zoom or some other remote way of connecting. And it is designed to, I suppose, help you understand your schemas and modes and coping styles in more detail. So in the Red Flag Project, you know, we obviously help you do that to a certain extent, but nothing sort of replaces the one-on-one time that you have with someone like Gemma and I. We've had a few bit of interest expressed. So if you were interested, just reach out to us at justineandgemma@goodmood.com.au and Kerry, our lovely practice manager, will be in touch with you. Is there anything more you wanted to say about that, Jim?
No, I mean, whether or not now is a good time to also mention that we're going to be developing an online membership
oh, yes,
for people who who really want to, for women in particular, who really want to explore this issue. Maybe you've had a history of finding yourself in those relationships, not necessarily these higher end toxic relationships, but relationships where your partner has always been emotionally unavailable and you've had all those buttons pushed in terms of your own schemas and your abandonment. So we're going to be introducing an online membership where we'll be presenting information and helping you, doing some group coaching and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so you'll do the red flag project, and then it's envisaged the membership will give you that ongoing support to make the changes you need to make, because the change is an ongoing thing, isn't it, Jem? You need that support and connection to gain momentum and make different decisions.
Not only would it help you in navigating romantic relationships, but also in the broader area of boundaries in relationships and making good choices in relationships in general, and understanding more about how you operate in relationships so you can be your best self in relationships.
Yeah.
Get the most out of and get your needs met.
Be your best self. That sounds good. So that's three different ways of working with us now.
Okay, so that's been a meaty one,
hasn't it?
Thank you, Justine, for going into therapist mode.
Thanks, Gemma, for being someone that I can help in my therapist mode.
Yes, reach out if this episode has been challenging for you to a trusted friend or to a mental health professional. By all means, do the red flag course, reach out to us. And we will pick up this next time when continuing on the topic.
Great.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Well, that's it for today. We really enjoyed spending time with you, and we hope that you keep listening. You can visit the podcast page on our website, goodmood.com.au, for more information and to access show notes. Please remember that this podcast is intended for information and learning purposes, and that it shouldn't be used as a substitute for personal therapy. So, please consult a qualified mental health professional for assistance that is tailored to your specific needs. Hope you stay well and take great care of yourself. Bye for now.